Okay.
Okay.
So it's a bit after 6:30. We can start this meeting. I'm going to read the public notice. So this is the regular Board of Library Trustees meeting of October 6th, 2021. And pursuant to Section 3 of Executive Order N-29-20, issued by Governor Newsom on March 17th, 2020, this October 6th, 2021 meeting of the Board of Library Trustees, will be conducted exclusively through teleconference and Zoom video conference. Please be advised that pursuant to the executive order and the shelter in place order, and to ensure the health and safety of the public by limiting human contact that could spread the COVID-19 virus, there will not be a physical meeting location available. All right, so you can submit email comments to bolt@cityofberkeley.info. And you can also enter the meeting by phone. And if you are using a phone, please press *9 to be recognized by the chair and wait to be recognized to speak. And please be mindful that the teleconference will be recorded as any Board of Library Trustees meeting is recorded. And all other rules of procedure and decorum will apply for Board of Library Trustees meetings conducted by teleconference or video conference. Also, this meeting will be conducted in accordance with the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54953. Any member of the public may attend this meeting. Please address any questions to Eve Franklin, our Administrative Secretary, 510-981-6102. The Board of Library Trustees may take action related to any subject listed on this agenda. All right. So having read the public advisory notice, if we can take roll call.
Okay. John Solowski.
Present.
Amy Roth.
Here.
Diane Davenport.
Here.
Beverly Green.
Here.
And Sophie Hahn.
Present.
Thank you.
Good. We have a full board tonight. Thank you all. Now, next on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda matters. You're allowed 3 minutes. And this is only for matters that are not on tonight's agenda. And I'm going to check to see if anybody, I see two hands. Claudia, to begin with, and then Cameron.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, hi, my name's Claudia Kopczynska. I live in District 2, I live in West Berkeley. I am an avid fan of the West Berkeley Library. I go to it quite often. And I'm really quite disappointed though that the West Berkeley Library is the only library in our system that is not open in morning hours. It only opens up at 2 o'clock. I'm a morning person for one, so personally, it's sort of an inconvenience to me. But I can just imagine the amount of people in West Berkeley, especially families with children, who would appreciate West Berkeley having the same hours as all the other libraries in our city do. I have asked people at the library, like, why is that? And they told me, well, there's not enough staffing. Well, there's enough staffing for South, Maine, North, whatever. And why are you singling out West Berkeley for limited hours? But thank you very much for giving us these wonderful libraries and keep up the great work. But please consider extending more hours to West Berkeley Library. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Cameron?
Great. Yes, my name is Cameron Wu. I live in West Berkeley, and I'm a longtime resident here, and I want to thank the board for overseeing one of the city's most valuable resources. Our city library is a treasure that serves all of its residents. So kudos to all of you and your and the staff at the libraries. I frequent my neighborhood branch at the in the West Berkeley and noticed on Saturdays that it is only open from 2 to 6 p.m. as opposed to the other library branches in the rest of the city that are open at 10 a.m. until 6. And since the weekend is the primary time that a lot of people can only can visit the library since they work, it's really a burden for people and particularly families. So I'd really like to encourage the board and the staff and the administration to revisit how staffing is appropriated to the various branches, because again, as Claudia mentioned, when I asked very politely the West Berkeley library staff, you know, why were the library hours in West Berkeley shortened? And they said it was because of shortage of staff. And so I don't know how you run your staff or whether staff can be interchanged or not, but I implore you, because it's a very nice library and well, seems to be well used by families and children, as well as individuals who use the computers and just enjoy the tranquil environment there. And it's one of the most treasured, you know, resources in our city that as a taxpayer, I feel is well used. So I just implore you not to single out West Berkeley by shortening our hours and let us have access to the library as much as everyone else in the rest of the city. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to check to see if anybody else has a hand up. I don't see any other hands for non-agenda items. All right, comments from the library unions. Excuse me. Do we have union reps here tonight? I don't see anybody on the list. Okay, we move on. Comments from Board of Library Trustees. And let's start with Beverly, our new member. Any comments?
Hello, it is, I am glad to hear that we have active comments from the public about the library. And I understand that there are staffing. I will be interested to hear about how we make sure that we have equity amongst all of the branches. Thank you.
Thank you. Diane?
Thanks, John. I just want to alert everybody that the Friends of the Library at the Central Library right now are having a sale on pulp fiction. And I might not come to you with this terrific announcement, except that the books are only $1 each. And if you go in, you can find incredibly pertinent titles like this one. And Earl Stanley Gardner's Perry Mason Mystery of the Case of the Troubled Trustee. So don't miss it. There are many, many of them there, and they're all, the date of each is listed, and they're only $1 a piece. And it's a real fun thing to be doing if you're passing by Central. So stop by.
Thank you, Diane. That's a great title. I wonder if it refers to any of us. Amy, you're up.
I have no comments at this time.
All right, thank you. And we have Sophie.
Yes, thank you. I was not here for Trustee Green's first meeting, so I didn't have the opportunity to welcome her. I'm so glad you're with us, so grateful that you are giving your time and your incredible wealth of expertise and experience to the service of the Berkeley Public Library. And I'm really excited to serve with you. So just welcome and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie. just if you will bear with me, my wife and I recently came back from a 3-week visit back east, our first trip since kind of mid to late 2019 because of COVID, and postponed, deferred memorial for my mom who died in late 2019, my 50th high school reunion, which was postponed, all these kind of family, and it was the John nostalgic tour, if you will. And we were everywhere. You know the Johnny Cash song. I felt like that. I've been everywhere. Long Island, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York City. We went up to Vermont and Boston. I mean, we were everywhere. But the point of all this is that no matter where I travel, even in Europe, wherever I am, I always stop in the libraries and chat with the librarians and get a sense of how they do things, how they're funded, whether they have a board of trustees. And I went to the library in Hackensack, New Jersey, which is a pretty vital library, actually, and two very small libraries in Vermont, Hardwick and Wolcott. One librarian libraries. So that one librarian sees pretty much everything, right? And it really is fascinating to chat with librarians and get a sense of, you know, what it means to their communities and how important it is for computer access, for books, for electronic, you know, all the electronic videos and books that are available. And they're all wonderful community centers, all of them. And they're run, all of them are run a little differently and have different governing bodies or funding sources, but there is a similarity and a community feel to all of them. And it's really heartening to be part of this and to see it elsewhere as well, even in small little towns in Vermont. And they're funded by, you know, by the town itself. Somehow they're funded, which is kind of amazing. Anyway, I thought I'd bring that up, and I guess we can move on now because I have nothing else to add. all right, where are we? Oh, the consent calendar. So we have 5 consent items. We have minutes from September 1st. We have authorization to open the Central Library and all branches 1 hour late to allow adequate time for an all staff meetings. We have our regular meeting schedule for 2022, which is C, the third item. We have holiday and early closing schedule for the libraries. And we have a reappointment of trustee, I wanted to point these out, of Amy Roth to serve another 4-year term, a second 4-year term. And Amy, I'm assuming that you're in agreement there, yes?
I would be happy to serve.
Good. All right, so if anybody has any questions or wants to pull something for comment or, you know, question staff about any of these, please feel free. But otherwise, I will. I see hands. I see a couple of hands. I see Sophie. I see Amy. Sophie?
Go ahead, Sophie.
Okay, wasn't sure who you were calling on. Thank you. I had some comments and maybe a request on our meeting dates. You very nicely noted that there's a city council schedule and you've put all the dates out. But then three of the dates that were chosen for Board of Library Trustee meetings are during council recesses. Obviously that doesn't impact everyone, but it does impact me. And I was wondering if it might be possible to at least move one or two of them, but I also wanted to ask, we always meet, if we moved all of our meetings to the second Tuesday of the month, a second Wednesday, it would completely solve the problem, but it might introduce problems for other people. So the ones that are during council recesses are January 5, which my guess is not everybody's favorite time to already be doing a meeting. So I was going to suggest at a minimum that we push that 1 week forward. The council recess in January ends January 18. But if we moved it forward, I'm sorry, January from the 5th, it would go to the 12th. So I wanted to suggest that partly for personal reasons, but I also think January 5 is just early in the year for people. In general, many people are still with family, whether they are on our board or might be in our audience. And then also the September 7 date is council gets back from recess. That one council gets back September 12, so that's probably not a big deal. And then the April 6th is during the spring recess. So, but I think the January one would be most important. So I just wanted to bring up the topic and see what people think. I did also want to thank you for actually looking up the Jewish holidays. We had a little kerfuffle around that at the city council recently. An official public meeting was scheduled on Yom Kippur, and it was quite complicated to get that canceled. And so there's actually an item on the council agenda this coming Tuesday to ensure that the city clerk and other city bodies respect all religious, major religious holidays, not just Christian and Jewish, but all. So I just wanted appreciate that.
Before I call on Amy, and I see Beverly's hand too, I think we have to put this on action because this is now a discussion. It's not a discussion for consent at this point. So it should be the first action item, Eve.
Okay.
We'll take it up in action.
Okay, yeah, sorry, I should have just done that.
That's okay, that's fine. You laid it out, so we have something to discuss now.
Yeah, no, at council, we talk about things, you know, for a couple of minutes and leave them on consent. But I know that a lot of bodies don't do that, so I should have probably asked for it to be removed.
Okay, so we still have A, B, D, and E on the consent. We're taking C into action.
Okay.
Anybody want to move? Amy, I'll call on you right now.
Well, my question is also about the schedule, so I can hold it until we discuss it in action.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
We shouldn't get into a long discussion and action during consent, you know?
Right. I agree.
Thank you. Beverly, I did see your hand, but I'm not sure I see you on screen right now. Yes.
So I will wait until item C comes to action also.
All right, thank you. All right, so we still have A, B, D, and E. Anybody want to move those? Anybody want to comment on them or whatever?
I move the consent calendar.
Which is A, B, D, and E. Right, thank you.
Second?
Is there a second from Amy?
Yeah.
Wonderful. Eve, roll call.
John Sawalski.
Yes.
Amy Roth.
Yes.
Diane Davenport. Beverly Green.
Yes.
And Sophie Hahn.
Yes.
Looks like Diane has stepped away for a moment.
Okay. Well, we have the votes anyway. It passed. So absent, I guess, for Diane. We can move to action. And again, now we're going to take up C from the consent, the meeting schedule for Board of Library Trustees. So Sophie kind of laid out her considerations. And Amy, I think you had a comment, and then Beverly.
Are yes. you calling on me? You're calling on Amy, right?
Amy first.
Yeah, I was just going to say it makes no difference to me, but it is not necessary to change the October 12th meeting for Sukkot, because in a short explanation, it is in the middle and the holidays are on the beginning and the end. It's Sukkot all week, but the middle section is different rules. So it's not necessary that you cancel the October 12th meeting. I have no skin in that game, but that is the fact.
I looked that up and it was kind of vague. So I was hoping one of you would be able to educate me on that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Beverly.
I have conflicts on every second and fourth Wednesday, so I wonder if we might move the January 2022 meeting to January 19th, and I would also have a conflict with October 12th, so I would prefer to leave it at October 19th.
Okay, good. I think that clarifies things, because I also have a standing conflict on the second Wednesday of the month, so I cannot meet on the second Wednesday of the month, not in the foreseeable future, at least. So where are we with January?
Well, it looks like if we move it to the 19th, it works for everybody.
That's good. Okay. And the others, so October would have to stay the 19th. I think, Sophie, you brought up April, but you didn't seem to think that was a major concern. Yes or no?
You know, I think it's partly, is it a concern for other people? I mean, it falls during one of the council recesses, but towards the end of it. And again, that's a concern I have. I'm not always available. I have like so many meetings. I really treasure the few weeks a year when I don't. But you know, that's just my concern. So I don't need to impose that on everybody. I did just want to say that I concur with Amy Roth that Sukkot is. Being in the middle of Sukkot shouldn't be a problem. And I don't think organizations usually pay too much attention to Sukkot. I think usually Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and maybe the first or second night of Hanukkah. But I also don't know for other religions. So I don't want to, you know, I think you might check. I think the city will probably be trying to put together something that's a little mm-hmm. bit more like a policy. Yeah. So we won't be trying to figure it out. But I would say that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, both of which are in the fall, it would never be a good idea to hold meetings on those evenings or the first, what would you say, Amy, the first and second night of Hanukkah, probably.
Okay.
So anyway, I would be prepared to make a motion that we approve the calendar with as presented, with one change, that we change January 5 to January 19.
I'll second
that. Yeah, I think that's acceptable to everybody. Is that, did I, Diane, were you going to second?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a second. And Beverly, oh, you took your hand down. I just, okay.
I was just going to suggest, I mean, I'm okay to meet on the third Wednesday of April, if that works for other people. I just can't meet on the second and fourth Wednesdays.
Right. I understand. Yes, I understand. And I have the same problem with the second Wednesday. I think the problem is the meetings get so, they're kind of telescoped. And for staff, that becomes an issue. If we're meeting the third Wednesday and then the first Wednesday of the following month, there's not that much in between.
Right.
And so, I mean, we want to have a little space in between for staff to generate an agenda, to get items on the agenda, to have some discussion about the agenda. And so if everything is telescoped, it does become an issue for staff. And I'm sensitive to that. Unless somebody has an alternate, motion, I think January 19th, I think it is that what was suggested? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we keep everything as presented. I think that's fine. Unless there's an objection. All right. I think we have a motion. We have a second. Is that correct?
Yep.
Eve, you want to do roll call?
John Solosky?
Yes.
Amy Roth?
Yes.
Diane Davenport?
Yes.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
So we have, I guess Tess is now going to take this one because we have the format of the director evaluation. We had some short discussion last month, and we do have kind of, I think we have a blueprint, if you will. But Tess, you wanna expand on that?
Sure, I'll expand on it just a little bit. As you mentioned, we did have a brief discussion. I think it was acknowledged by the trustees present that it would be helpful to have Trustee Hahn's feedback
yep.
incorporated as well. And so what we determined is that it would be helpful for the board just to hear an informational update on the basically my progress towards the goals that were outlined in the work plan that I had submitted in the winter. And at the same time, we wanted to move forward with the question of what format the evaluation would need to take. And Trustee Davenport reviewed the various formats that are provided on the website that's indicated in your packet, which is the United for Libraries Organizational Tools for Trustees site. And we've all, the original onboarding committee, which was Deputy Director Elliot Warren, who's since left the library, and Trustee Roth and Trustee Davenport had reviewed some of this information earlier. And Trustee Davenport reviewed a variety of formats, and we both felt that the one that she selected was the most appropriate and the most inclusive of the qualities and the evaluation criteria that we felt was most appropriate for the director position. And so Trustee Davenport took time to make edits to the form. I also reviewed those edits and made some additional edits. And we've included it in the packet for your review and discussion tonight, basically just to determine whether this form seems to achieve the goals that we have for the evaluation or whether it's necessary to take additional steps.
John?
Thank you, Tess. Yes, Diane.
I think one of the things to remember in all of this is the last two directors, at least, did not get evaluated. So we're sort of reinventing the wheel here. And so we're trying to find a format that allows us a way to evaluate the things that we can see that the director is doing and give positive feedback and make this the best possible system possible. And I think we all felt that while this form isn't perfect, we've tried to make it more inclusive to things about Berkeley. It includes the Friends, it includes the foundation. It talks about the city of Berkeley. So we tried to make it work for us. And I think what's important is for us to go ahead and take a crack at it this year. And if there are going to be places where we probably don't have any information to evaluate on that specific criteria, and that's fine. After we do it once, we can determine those things and we can either eliminate them or say, you know, we just couldn't do it this year because Tessa's new and it's been an emergency situation and she hasn't had time to do X. It will come up next year. So the world has been moving sort of around us, but I do think it's important to move ahead if we can and use as much of the form as we can so that we can get started on this process and just work with it as we have it and make it better as we can.
Well put, Diane, thank you. And I agree. At this point, I think it's important that we do something and then tweak it in future years. I mean, as you say, we're inventing this right now. This board hasn't done this and previous boards haven't done an evaluation. So it's been a while. And we'll learn from this and, you know, we'll move forward. Other members of the board, I don't see any hands up, but please. Oh, Amy, now your hand's up.
Yeah. I am just wondering, I don't think we've discussed, once we've filled out our forms and gathered all the information and so forth and so on, what happens then? Do we think that one or two board members will talk with Tess? I am never quite comfortable with five against one, but if Tess doesn't mind, maybe that's okay. You know, it feels a little bit inquisitional. So I think that we have moved quite a bit forward, and it won't be that long before that question needs to be answered.
Amy, it's a good question. My druthers is to have two people, but you know, that's just my druthers right now. Sophie.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for all the work that's already gone into this. Can I just have a clarification? Was the idea that this kind of review of progress towards goals is one half of it, and then there's another piece of it that is the form, and that the two together constitute the review? Is that the thinking?
If I might, John, I think I can respond.
Yeah, please, Tess.
Thank you, Sophie. No, the the report on the progress toward the goals is not intended to be documentation that's part of the evaluation. It's more just one of the documents that the trustees could use to assess basically the categories that are on the form and to evaluate sort of based on various sources of information, which could include the bold minutes, the content that's discussed in meetings, information that you might have sort of outside of meetings. And this report on the progress toward the goals would just be an information source that would support your own completion of the form.
Got it. Okay, great. That's very helpful. So, I mean, I think the form, I agree with you, Diane, it, you know, may not be perfect, but it's a perfectly good place to start. And we, in using it, we may decide, in interacting with it and using it, we'll learn what works and what doesn't. I do think there's a lot of questions here where I feel like I'll be, you know, putting a U unknown because they're kind of down in the weeds in a way that I don't really have. I feel like I don't have the ability to answer that question. So, you know, to that extent, just sort of glancing through it, I'm a little concerned that there's, you know, quite a few things here where I just won't be able to say. On the other hand, you know, that's fine. There are also things in here that I think, you know, I will be able to say something. So I don't think that's really necessarily a problem. I will say that as a general matter, and I think I've said this before numerous times, first of all, I don't view this as an inquisition in any way, or to me, this is not a judgmental process, not about judgment. To me, the whole yearly review process is about finding out what the barriers have been to achieving goals that we have set together for the organization. And so when I see like, oh, something, a goal that we set and something that was in the director's work plan, it wasn't achieved, then I want to know, what were the barriers? Was there a lack of resources? Is the goal somehow superseded? Is it a skill set where the executive director might want some support? To me, it's about identifying how we can make our directors successful, not about identifying like weaknesses and giving someone like a report card. So my vision of how we get to something like that is that we spend a lot more time every year up front, really focusing on what our goals are for the library. And then our executive director translates those goals into her own work plan for herself. And then she presents that work plan to us. And we don't approve her work plan, but we agree, we have a discussion about it. And then at the end of the year, she does something very similar to what she's done here. Here's the work plan we all talked about. Here are the goals for the library. Here's what has been completed. Here's what's still in progress. And here are things that we weren't able to do. And here are some of the reasons why. And these are the things that would help me get them done. Or maybe they should be taken off of the work plan, they became irrelevant. So I would actually like to move, personally, I'd like to move away from sort of an evaluative checklist and more towards what for me is a more holistic and positive, we're in this together, how do we support you? How do we identify areas where you need support to accomplish the work of the library? So I'm happy to go ahead with this year. I'm just putting it out there that's the model I would like us to work towards. And then on the question of like how many people are in the room, I will differ from my colleagues. I mean, honestly, the city manager, she gets 9 people in the room. And I don't think there's anything challenging about 5 because I view this as a supportive moment, not as an evaluative moment. So I don't see any reason why we aren't all in the room. Those are all my comments.
Thank you, Sophie. And I agree with you. It's, to me, and I've said it before, it's not an adversarial process. It's a collaborative process. And not only is it for tests, but it's also for us as board members. It allows us all to identify strengths and weaknesses and grow together. And I think that's really important. That's important to keep in mind for me. And I have no problem with 5 of us. It's just, I know it's really, really difficult to schedule 5 of us outside of our regular meetings. And, you know, that's just for the sake of expediency. I was leaning toward 2 people or, you know, something less than 5. But if we can get it together and have 5 people in the room, I think that's great. It would be 6 people, but yes.
I'll suggest that we schedule it as a continuation of a Bolt meeting. So we can schedule a Bolt meeting from 6 to 7:30 or 6:30 to 8. And then we can schedule a closed session from 8 to 9. I mean, we often go to 9 anyway, or something like that.
That's a possibility.
Schedule it from 5:30 to 6:30. I don't like to change the time for the public, but I think we can make it work.
Okay. Anybody else? Is that your hand,
John?
Diane? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I think we did talk about a couple of meetings ago. We talked about it, tacking it right on to the November meeting, either before or after it. So I think that we don't need to schedule another time for it. And I think if we use the evaluation form this time and find that it's just perfectly useless, we may just abandon it, but I don't think it hurts to look at it. And I agree with Sophie. I think in looking at the work plan is really where we're going to find the most of value to us all. And I think that'll teach us to put much more into helping set that work plan for the next year. So I look forward to doing that too. And I think it should be all 5 of us. And I think it'll be a very easy time for each of us to have 3 or 4 things to say that have gone really, really well and look at some things maybe that haven't been accomplished or that we simply would like to see accomplished in the next year, which is no bad reflection on what's happened. It's just been because of the times we haven't gotten to certain things. So I think looking at both of these things will force us to think about those things and imagine what can be done in the coming year.
All right, good. Anybody else? All right. Do we want to nail this down, or where are we?
Do you need a motion to approve the format? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Basically, generally, so that we have something to move on to.
What is the recommended action? It just says continued discussion of the format review. I don't think we have to enact it, but Tess and Eve, do you think that we need a resolution here? I mean, to approve the format.
Formally? I don't think that we need a formal resolution, but I do think that it would be helpful to establish that this was what the collective thought was the path forward. I did not want to assume that that's what everybody would feel after reviewing the form.
Okay, I'm happy to make a motion to approve the director evaluation form for the Board of Library Trustees as proposed in attachment 2 and supported by the, what are we calling this? By the priority projects review provided in attachment 1 and to schedule a closed session with all trustees to meet with Director Meyer to be the format for this year's director review.
Okay. Amy, I see your hand. Go ahead. You're muted.
Yep.
Sorry. Are we scheduling this for November 3rd?
I don't know.
Are we prepared for that? Tess, are you prepared for that?
If every one of the trustees is to complete the form individually, and then those would be submitted to the president and then averaged into a single form, so basically compiled into a single form, I wonder if that would allow for enough time for that process to take place.
You definitely have a point, but I don't want to put this off any further than December. I mean, obviously, I'm speaking for myself.
And Amy, I agree with you, but Tess has a good point there, and I was thinking the same thing myself. If everybody has to fill out the form, send them to me, and I have to aggregate them, this could take a little bit of time, right?
I'll take a friendly amendment to closed session review should take place no later than December 15th.
Yep, I like that.
Because if we resolve that it has to be a certain day, then you can't undo that without bold action, and that I think that would be.
Yeah. I think that solves it. Thank you, Sophie.
Eve, did you get that? I'm not sure I was super articulate with that. You are muted.
I'm going to be able to pull that from the transcript verbatim. So,
very good. Amy, you still have hand up? Did you have?
No, sorry.
That's okay.
I'll take it down.
Anybody else? So we have a motion, which covers the ground, and also sets a date by. You know, Diane.
No, I was just laughing.
was that a second?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead. Second.
I missed some of the. Yeah. Okay. We have a motion. We have a second. Any other discussion? I think we're pretty set here. Thank you, Sophie. Thank you all. Eve. Roll call.
Hey, John Solosky.
Yes.
Amy Roth.
Yes.
Diane Davenport.
Yes.
Beverly Green.
Yes.
And Sophie Hahn.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you. I think we're getting there, Tess. All right. We have at least a couple, if not more, information items here. What do we have first? Okay.
Erica's first.
Erica Glenn?
That's me.
Are you ready for me to go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Welcome, just, by the way.
Thank you. I'm just going to share my screen. Okay. All right. Can everyone see the screen now?
Yes, we can. Yep. Okay. Erica, this is Tess. I just want to chime in and say, just for the benefit of Trustee Green and also Nika, who's joining us for her first meeting, I just want to make sure that everybody knows who you are and the fantastic work that you do. So if you wouldn't mind starting with that, that would be great. But I really can't say enough about how hard Erica has worked to manage programming during this pandemic period and just basically ride the waves. So I'll turn it over to you, but I just wanted to say thanks for being here and thank you for being here through the first part of the meeting.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Sorry, I didn't introduce myself. My name is Erica Dean Glenn. I'm a senior librarian in Children's Services, and I work out of the Central Library and the Central Children's Room. And so I'm here tonight to talk about Summer Reading 2021. Our theme this summer was Reading Colors Your World. And I wanted to just take a minute to recognize everyone who was in our Summer Reading Committee this year. We had Casey Bryan from Adult Services, Emma Coleman from Children's Services, myself, Sylvia Duenas from Circulation Services, Ilan Iman from IT and Adult Services, he does double duty, Michael Quende at Claremont Branch, he's a children's librarian there, Josh Lockman, a children's librarian at the Terea Hall Pittman South Branch, Una Okragli at North Branch, and Amy Reeder from Administration. But I also wanted to acknowledge that by the time we start summer reading, usually in June, everyone, and by the time we finish it, every department at the library, every unit at the library has contributed in some way or fashion. So it's really kind of an all hands on deck program. Definitely summer reading is that. Our committee really doesn't just work during the summer on summer reading, but we basically will start next month really seriously looking at ordering, planning, evaluating, and getting started for summer 2022. So this was year two of summer reading during COVID. And there were some things that were the same and some things that were very different. This year, BUSD actually started their end date of the last day of school. The last day of school was June 4th. And we typically start summer reading each year on the last day of school to make it easier for kids to remember to register. So we started in early June and completed summer reading on August 7th. Just before kids were supposed to go back to school. Another thing that was different this year was that libraries this year were open to the public. So from late May to June, we were opening our libraries to the public, and that meant a little change in how we did summer reading. In 2020, we were very conscious and concerned about safety. So we, instead of handing out sign-up books, which is what we do whenever someone registers, whether it's a child, a teenager, or an adult, they have a choice of books that they can pick for signing up for summer reading. And instead of having someone choose, we gave out what we called mystery packs. We put on our gloves, we looked at the age range of the registrant, and then we put books into a bag with these beautiful stickers that Amy Reeder helped design. And we had, we put the patron's name on them and put them out where all the books could be picked up for holds. That created a little bit of a lag time because we had to run all of the reports to get the new registrants' names and put them out and people, so it wasn't like you could register and then immediately 10 minutes later, pick up your book. So this year, what we did instead was we went back to our trusty choice sheets. And so it was really, really convenient that our libraries were open so that we could eliminate long lines of people trying to choose books. This is an example of a choice sheet that for kids that we had this summer. We also continued, it was also a good thing that we did not have to take the time to print out reports of names and pack up bags full of books, because we are spending more time on putting together our story times. At the end of summer 2020, we started doing virtual story times. And so we were continuing with that. And here is our logo for our story time with Berkeley Public Library, our virtual story time. And we also had virtual programming that continued from last year. In addition to virtual story time and virtual programming, we also had in-person story time. So children's librarians from three locations had in-person story times, outdoor story times. And here you see at North Branch, Sheila Liu and Kenny Blake at the North Branch doing a story time. And here is at Bateman Mall Park near the Claremont branch. We have Michael Quende in the center with a book, Donovan Russell on the guitar, Juan Castile at the drums, and our in the shade, our wonderful beloved volunteer, Mr. Tim, who also plays guitar. And they do outdoor story times at our Claremont branch. Those started in July, and in August, we started, or Josh Lockman at the Terea Hall Pittman South Branch started story times at Grove Park in August. We also were trying to figure out how we can get the word out to students in the schools, because usually at the end of the school year, we go into the schools en masse and talk about summer reading to all of the students. We go to every BUSD school. We weren't able to do that in the beginning of this summer. So we made promo videos for schools. Here you see a picture of our teen librarian, Will Marston, who talked about how to sign up for summer reading and then talked about great book titles that might interest teens. Children's librarians also came together. All of us put together a video so that we could explain summer reading to the kids, how to sign up for it in this new format, and also talk about titles for various age groups. And then we took those videos for various age groups and sent links to the teachers. And we also put them on our Berkeley Public Library Kids YouTube page. And here is a 1 minute video just showing the beginning of our summer reading promo video for children.
Summer is just around the corner. You probably already knew that. But with summer comes the Summer Reading Challenge at Berkeley Public Library. This year, the theme is Reading Colors Your World.
I always forget when the end of that video comes. So next up, I just wanted to talk a little bit about statistics. So in just before COVID, summer 2019, we had, I went forward and I didn't mean to go forward. Let's see if I can go backwards. There we go. We had an excellent completion rate. Usually we hover around 40% in our completion rate. So the numbers that you see here, we've a little over 3,000 in terms of registrations for the summer reading challenge, and about half of those completed the summer reading challenge. In summer 2020, of course, those numbers dipped quite a bit. That was due to COVID and also the transition to fully online summer reading. That we ended up with a 26% completion rate, which given the tumultuous summer, the tumultuous year that we had, we were happy to see that, although wish that we could have gotten a little closer to our 51%. In summer 2021, we did notice an additional drop in numbers, although the percentage was slightly higher than in terms of completions, just because the numbers were closer together in terms of the registrations and completions. We attributed that possibly to the fact that by summer 2021, we had the vaccine and there were fewer restrictions in the outside world and people were doing a lot of things. And so we believe that patrons were probably involved in a lot of activities. And families and patrons were more on the move, but we saw that many organizations were still feeling the pinch from COVID. And so some of our partnerships were not as robust as in previous years. For instance, we typically go out to three playground sites, summer playground sites, the city of Berkeley, and hand out books and do a story time. And this year, we were only able to make it to one of those sites. We only had interest from one of those sites. However, we were able to, at that one site, give out 120 books. That was at the Martin Luther King Youth Center, allowing each child to have a gift of at least two books that they could choose from, including hardcover copies of the very popular Dog Man graphic novel. As you can see in the bottom blue table, there was no shortage of people who were actively engaged with the online challenge. Another thing about the online challenge and the difference in the numbers from 2020 to 2021 is that in 2020, it was fully online. And in 2021, we reintroduced a paper option. And we're thinking that it's possible that people might have done their entire summer reading program on paper and then forgotten to check back in with us to say, hey, we completed, or we even registered. So that could also be part of the reason for lower numbers as well. We had 178 reviews written by people of all ages, from as young as 4 years old to adult. And this is an example of some of our, they called peer reviews that were posted on our Beanstack platform for summer reading. There's a few more reviews there. Really enthusiastic, some wonderful actual reviews, some very long, like New York Times level, and some very short, as in, I liked this book. Now onto programming. Again, our theme this year was Reading Colors Your World. And we had a number of programs that dealt with art. We had Cartooning for Kids with Kara Goldstein. And during that program, we found out that we had participants from as far away as Australia and India. That was actually the only program where we thought to say, hey, where's everybody tuning in from? So that was actually a wonderful bit of knowledge. The adult services team also had a few programs that had to do with art, including the discovery of a masterpiece with a bust that was sculpted by Auguste Rodin, was found in a New Jersey town hall after 80 years. And we also, the adult services team also had a streaming for a month, a documentary about artist and animator Tyrus Wong, who immigrated to this country from China and then worked on the movie Bambi. And in this picture here, you see an intergenerational program run by Josh Lockman, children's librarian at the Treya Hall Pittman South Branch. He did green sketching on the UC Berkeley campus. And here you see participants checking out everyone's sketch. To continue with programming, we also put programs and little short rhymes and songs and crafts and experiments on our Berkeley Public Library Kids YouTube page. Here we have a make and take craft that Emma here, you can see her hands, is demonstrating how to make a rubber band book. And then in the bottom picture, I am showing demonstrating capillary action using water, paper towels, and food coloring. And then we also had Engineers in Training, which was a partnership between us and the American Society of Civil Engineers San Francisco Young Member Forum. They ran the program and put together 30 kits that patrons picked up at the library, and it was a 4-week program. So each week, a different group of kids could sign up, or the same group of kids could sign up. And every week they discussed a different principle in engineering, and we actually did the program in a meeting format so we could see them and they could see us, and we all worked on our experiments together. So that enabled the kids to ask questions in real time, we could model participation to the kids and guide them through the experiment. At the end of every summer reading program, there are, of course, prizes. Typically, what we do is we get donations from companies and organizations around Berkeley. And of course, with COVID, there's still a lot of businesses that are in a state of recovery. So we continue, this is our second year of doing a prize drawing, and we would like to continue that in some form or fashion again in summer 2022. On the side, you see this brightly colored announcement that we sent out to each of the winners of various prizes. This prize was a prize of a hardcover picture book and a plush big stuffed plush stuffy of a crayon with a bag to carry it all home in. We had prizes ranging from a guitar, a ukulele. We had gift cards. A gift card to Pegasus, a gift card to Artists and Craftsmen Art Supply Store, and a bike. Our children's librarian, Armin Arethna, actually secured a donation from Mike's Bikes of Berkeley, and we are very grateful to them. This is our second year donating a bike to us to give to a prize recipient. And we got this lovely, this is the young man and his mom who won the bike, and this is the thank you letter that we received from him. It says, "Dear Berkeley Public Library, thank you so much for holding a summer reading program every year. I love to read. It helps me learn and I get to use my imagination. I really appreciate getting a bike." And we covered his name up for his privacy. But it's notes like that. It's the excitement that we see when people come in. And even over the phone, people who are excited about summer reading, and that is the reason why we do what we do. And I just want to thank you for your time.
Erica, thank you for your time. That was great. Really comprehensive.
Thank you.
I think we got a feel for the summer the entire program. Thank you. Board members, anybody? Yes, yes, kudos. All right, thank you, Erica. So, Sophie, hand up.
Yeah, I just wanted to express my gratitude more emphatically. Not just for the program, but also for the presentation tonight, which I thought was very comprehensive and informative. I had one question. Do we track demographics of who participates in these programs?
We track what schools people come from, the ages that are signing up, what branches they're signing up at, but really that's kind of the extent of the demographics in terms of.
Yeah, so we don't know like if they're dispersed throughout the city or, you know, whether they're mostly boys or girls, anything like that.
Yeah, we decided, and there is a way to ask that, but we decided not to ask about gender when people were signing up. And other than if they were going to their neighborhood branch to sign up, we don't know exactly because someone could very well live near Central but sign up at North. So we know where people have chosen, I shouldn't say sign up at, because obviously often they're doing it online, but we leave it up to the patron to say, this is my home branch. So
do we know that whether it was somewhat evenly distributed among home branches? That seems like a decent approximation.
Yeah, and I actually have that information. I know that we had the most signups at North Branch, I believe followed by Claremont and Terea Hall Pittman South this year. I tracked the first three, but yeah.
Well, I know these years are just weird and you can't really learn that much from them, but I think in the long run, in terms of building back the participation that you've had in the past and maybe even growing from there, I look forward to hearing how we can really expand our outreach and make sure that we have some, you know, equity in where we are getting our intake, shall we call it? I don't know what the best word is, mm-hmm. but I think that can be some useful information for us in the future to shape the continued flourishing of the program. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, but thank you very much. I know it's been really hard for everybody to morph and figure out how to do virtual programming and make it engaging and figure out how to do hybrid programming and when there is in-person programming, how to do it safely. And I just want to acknowledge how much innovation and adaptation and goodwill you and all of our library staff have shown these past 2 years, and really always seeking to keep relevant and engaging programming through difficult times. And I just want to thank you very sincerely for all of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Sophie. Again, thank you, Erica. We can move on to our closing budget results. Dennis Tess, who's Dennis?
Well, actually, thank you, John, and thank you, Erica. This is an interesting meeting because we have a changing of the guard, so to speak. So what has occurred is Dennis Dang, who many of you had an opportunity to meet, had been our fiscal administrative services manager for 13 years. He prepared this final report. Before I provide more context about the report, I do want to add that our new fiscal administrative services manager, Nika Gallaried, has started her position. She's turned on her camera to say hi. Thank you, Nika. And Nika started on October 4th, was it? This is your first week. So we felt that I felt that it would not make sense to have her comment on Dennis's report. But she's really doing a fantastic job, and I'm so grateful to have her here in this role. I think it's going to be great for the library. Nika has a really interesting skill set and array of experience. She's coming to us from another city department, the health and Housing Community Services Department, where she was a senior management analyst for 5 years. Is that, Nika?
Almost, I think, 6. It was
5. Yeah. And she's also had extensive experience in San Francisco. So a lot of municipal and county experience. And also Nika worked for a department that was funded through a special fund, which is somewhat similar to the library as well. So I just wanted you to have an opportunity to meet Nika. And of course, she'll be presenting next month, and she's learning about our board meetings this evening. So thanks for being here, Nika.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello, and thank you. Welcome.
Thank you.
So I just wanted to make a few comments about Dennis's report. Generally, this would be, in most years, this has been a consolidated report. So it basically, we report on the closing numbers, and then we also would have provided the board with a resolution to change the adopted budget based on what the closing numbers actually were. But in this particular case, and because of the timing of Dennis's retirement, he was able basically to do the first part, which is to report on the closing budget. But we still need to provide you with more specific data around what the carryovers were that are making the budget come in a little bit higher. And so we will need to provide you with a resolution to change the budget by, I believe it's about $114,000, and that will be coming to you next month after we have time to do more research about what the specific carryovers were. So this is the report on basically the annual budget cycle that included fiscal years 2020 and 2021. I think probably as most of you remember, of course, Trustee Green had not joined our group yet. At the end of fiscal year 2021, we did need to make an adjustment, and there was an adjustment approved by resolution that related to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic and also our construction projects at the Central Library impacting that first year. So there was a significant adjustment at the end of that first year. And this report includes the closing numbers, of course, for the second fiscal year in this biennial budget cycle. I do want to mention that then, of course, the board passed the fiscal year 2022 budget, which was a one-year budget. And I wanted to make sure that everyone was aware that the city has already initiated our next biennial budget process. So Nika and I are preparing to engage in the budget process for the next biennial cycle, which would incorporate fiscal years 23 and 24. So that's just a short summary of where we are, just because it was highly unusual that we had that one-year budget that was sort of sandwiched in between the two biennial cycles. And with that, I'll conclude. Unless there are any questions, I just wanted to make sure that the board understood that we were not providing a resolution to change the budget at this month's meeting, but that we will be in the November meeting.
Okay, very good, Tess. Thank you. Board members, any questions for Tess? All right. Good, pretty straightforward. Thank you. Report on progress of annual goals for you.
Thank
you.
Thanks very much. So I'm glad that we had that opportunity to hear from Erica, because the conclusion of the meeting will include a number of different reports for me. I'm going to go ahead and share a presentation with you. Is that working for everyone? From my screen, it looks like it is. So this is a summary of what's provided in your board packet. It's basically a progress report on the various goals that were identified at the beginning of the year for this position. And of course, the goals represent the time and effort of many different people. And I think it's important for me to acknowledge that in my leadership position, a lot of what I do is support other people in their progress towards a variety of goals. And hopefully throughout this, I'll be able to acknowledge a lot of different people's efforts as well. One thing that I thought would be helpful to do is highlight some of the, I think, the biggest achievements that our team was able to accomplish this year. Of course, I think leading the library system through the largest surges of the COVID-19 pandemic safely was honestly the most important thing that we could have done. We protected our staff. The staff protected themselves. We protected the public and helped them access services safely. And I think that's really important. I also want to say that the library staff, you know, were providing service in person from very early on. And of course, I can't take credit for that. That was due to my predecessor, Elliot Warren's efforts and that team. But we were able to continue the service through all of these different stages of the pandemic. I also just want to say that reopening the library system for in-building service in a manner that was sustainable with existing staffing levels has been significant. It's a commitment that I made to our unions that we would open to the extent possible with our existing staff. And obviously, as we've heard tonight, there's considerable room for improvement. And I don't want to disregard that, but at the same time, I think it's been very important that we've been able to reopen all locations. And that does include West, which is actually people are able to pick up their materials in the morning at West as well. I just wanted to clarify that point. I also wanted to emphasize that Berkeley Public Library applied for the California Cultivating Race Equity Inclusion Initiative, which is called the CREI program for short. And we've formed our own internal racial equity change team who has called themselves the Berkeley Public Library Racial Justice Advisory Group. Again, I want to emphasize that this wasn't a given. We needed to apply. We needed to make the case for why our library system should be included. And we had to mobilize very quickly to be able to get our team together in time to make the deadline. And I also just wanted to highlight that we went through a budget process, which was an interesting challenge for someone like me who is new to the organization. I made a commitment to staff that we would uphold a transparent process and provide multiple opportunities for feedback. And I did that on a number of occasions. And I feel proud of the fact that we were able to incorporate authentic feedback from both the board and the staff and the public as well. I would like to also remind us of some of the things that happened that were both unexpected and expected, I guess, in some ways. The pandemic, of course, continued. We probably can't emphasize enough that how the unpredictable nature of the trajectory of the pandemic impacted us. When I first started, Elliot, in partnership with human resources manager Danielle, they'd been able to do a significant recruitment in 2019, but prior to my joining the team, the library was already carrying 25 vacancies on the books. I just want to make sure that I remind everyone of that, because I understand that people are concerned and wanting to make sure that we're able to fill those positions, and I'm in complete agreement, and we're working as hard as we can to make that happen. And I also want to add that my colleague, Elliot Warren, who I really appreciated working with, For the first 2 months of my tenure with BPL, he left in December. Unfortunately, he needed to make a different choice in terms of his life. But it was a pretty unique challenge to join an organization and then also at the same time have fairly limited administrative support at the same time as we were leading the organization through such an unusual time. And of course, people have been very happy with the service they've been able to receive. And yes, we do strive to continue to improve access, but I'm really proud of the fact that we are able to come back from this and provide this service to people and see that libraries are operating fairly normally now. So in terms of the various budget priorities that Bolt identified, one of these was provide state-of-the-art, well-maintained infrastructure, amenities, facilities. And I don't want to go into too much detail because I do understand that this report to you is dense. And I will add that this PowerPoint will be made available in the next board packet. So it will be in print and available for all of you. I'm proud of the fact that we were able to complete the Central Library Improvements Project. I owe so much of that to Brian Gavin, our facilities manager. But he and I together continued to steer that process and ensure that we reached successful completion and that that we were able to deal with all of the unexpected things that arose during that process. I also wanted to say that or announce that both the stucco replacement project and also the replacement of our air conditioning units have both been initiated. The stucco replacement contract is in place and that team is ready to begin work. And we've identified a vendor for the air conditioning units. And so we're ready to progress with that. And there's a third issue that relates to a chronic leak that there's basically water, groundwater coming through when it rains and leaking into the teen room. And this has been something that's been occurring for years, but we've been working with Public Works to ensure that we're able to pursue a solution that they recently identified report that they just did on this problem. So I'm really happy that we're actually moving forward with not just identifying the problem, but hopefully moving toward a solution for that. I want to acknowledge Alicia Abramson's efforts in making sure that our printing contract was in place. Printing and photocopying contracts are actually very complicated, and it took us a long time to usher this process through. Alicia's IT team also identified temporary printing solutions for patrons so that they would not be without printing capability while this was happening. And that's almost done. I'm happy to say that that's being reviewed by our legal team right now. I'd also like to thank Kathy Huff and Joy, of course, our previous children's services manager at Central, Joy Shioshita. She had been working with Kathy, and now Emma, one of our children's librarians, is working with Kathy to move forward with the storytime space planning process, which is exciting. Another one of our budget priorities to champion and demonstrate social and racial equity. And I think that there's a lot that our system needs to do to respond to improve our response and ensure that all of our processes incorporate racial equity as a planning principle. But I do think that it was an important start for us to become part of this program. And our team is also looking at what kind of training options will make the most sense for our staff. Eventually, our team will be creating a racial equity plan for the system that will touch on every aspect of what we do. So that would include service planning, program planning, recruitment. Eventually, it'll go across the board. Looks like there's Is everyone still able to see the presentation?
I can.
Okay. With respect to providing timely, easily accessible services and information to the community, excuse me, again, I just want to point out that the foundation has really supported the library and in an extremely important way. They provided the library with the funding to purchase laptops and hotspot devices that we could lend to the public that would help us provide access to computing, particularly for vulnerable populations during the pandemic, but beyond. We're continuing this project. We think it's really important. People have been very appreciative, and we've been able to reach a lot of people who might not otherwise either feel comfortable coming into the library, or they may have needs that we can't meet. A lot of people who are looking for jobs or applying for housing and other programs need more time on the computer. And so we're happy that we're able to provide these computers to people. We were also able to expand our culinary tools collection. Of course, we did that with foundation support, but you heard a presentation on this several months ago. There were so many different staff involved in making this happen. And I'm proud of the fact that we are able to do it again during the pandemic period. There's a goal here that we have yet to achieve, which is we'd like to create a student library card program with the Berkeley Unified School District. And this was postponed for a little bit. We know that it's been quite challenging for schools managing the return to in-person education. But I'm happy to say that our central services supervising librarian, Heather, has made contact with Jessica, who's the lead librarian for Berkeley Unified School District. And we will be moving forward on this project soon. With respect to supporting safety, wellness, and recovery, again, we were able to successfully reopen our library service and maintain a safe environment. We were able to reopen the newly renovated Central Library. We were able to add the social worker position to through our budget process, as you might recall, in last year's budget process. But this recruitment is pending, and so we're looking forward to eventually recruiting that person into our team. In terms of this budget priority was more of a sort of internal facing one that related to making sure that the library was in the best possible position, to support organizational development, responsiveness. This priority also addressed staff training and the strategic plan. So in terms of some of these pieces, we have not yet determined our pathway towards initiating a strategic planning process. We were able to conduct a Brown Act training. We were able to provide a budget workshop. With respect to the bylaws, I'll be following up on that in a few minutes during the director's report. We've been able to address some of the outstanding recommendations that were made by the city auditor. There were a couple that are more comprehensive, which include actually a strategic plan, having a strategic plan inform our programs and service, which we have not been able to accomplish yet. And of course, we're still in process of transitioning to Irma, because that is a process that involves all of the different city departments. And of course, Nika will be very much involved in that as well. With respect to individual staff meetings, I was able to conduct those for several months. I needed to temporarily discontinue when the staffing situation changed in our administrative team. And I've been able to now reintroduce weekly times when staff can drop in and talk with me about whatever they want to. So I'm happy that we've been able to reintroduce that. I think that we've created strong collective decision-making dynamics through our various leadership groups that meet, whether it be the Library Council of Supervisors and Managers, our Joint Labor Management Team, our Safety Committee. There are a number of different staff entities or groups, and we're, I think, successfully ushering through basically prioritization of activities and decision-making in a number of these different bodies. With respect to the operating budget, we were able to pass the budget and provide an in-depth presentation on the thinking behind the budget that we had proposed. With respect to community relationships, I think this has been, this normally would be extremely important for a new director. I want to emphasize that I see this as being very important. And also, I think in some ways it's been challenging in the context of COVID to do as much personal outreach as I would have liked to. So I think that this is an area where I like to focus somewhat more in the following year. But as you know, it's important for me to form relationships with community groups like the Rotary. It's important for me to establish working relationships with other people on the City of Berkeley leadership team, our colleagues and the Friends and the Foundation. There are also a lot of consortia that our library is a part of. We are part of the Pacific Library Partnership as well as Bayless. And these are our formal consortia, and I participate in meetings with these groups. And I'm also now the vice president of Bayless as well. And here's the chance when I am going to mention just a few things that weren't on the calendar exactly, or they were not planned in the way that some of these other things were planned. But I want to mention them because they're substantive and required a lot of time and effort. I participated at two different labor negotiations tables that extended over 3 months and represented hours and hours of time. And normally, again, this may not have been something that I might have done. It might have been a role somebody else, such as a deputy, might have taken. But I felt that it was important for the library to have a representative. And this was the option that we had. I also wanted to share that after Elliot retired, I took on the direct supervision of 11 people. Four additional people that brought the total of direct reports that I have to 11 people. And I think that's really significant when you consider that, you know, people need support. They need guidance. They need to be able to talk. They need to be able to learn. And I take this work very seriously, and it's a significant body of work. I also want to mention that because of one of the COVID surges, we needed to go through a meet and confer process with our unions to change staff schedules, which is quite complicated from an operational perspective. We went through a recruitment process to bring in somebody new, Nika, to replace Dennis, who had retired after 13 years. This is also a significant transition. We also managed the recruitment of a new trustee, and I'd like to thank all of the trustees for their support and all of their time and effort in that process, because obviously you were all very much involved in that as well. And I also want to add that I've addressed some personnel issues that were brought to my attention that were significant, that I felt had not been successfully resolved. And that's something that takes a lot of focus as well. So I'd just like to emphasize that despite some of these challenges and a lot of change, I do feel that we've positioned the library system for a positive future direction. And I think that the next phase is exciting, although there's certainly a lot more for us to do. So I'll go ahead and stop sharing and just pause and ask whether there are any questions that you have at this time.
Yeah, board members. Thank you, Tess. That was a great report. Thank you. A really good summary. Board members, anybody? Diane.
I don't know about everybody else, but after that, I'm personally exhausted. I'm amazed at the amount of work that's gone on and the flexibility of you and the administrative staff and the flexibility of all the staff for working together through just a crazy time, seeing the vision of the library out there and sticking to it. What a game. Congratulations to you all.
Thank you, Diane. Beverly.
I also want to join my colleague in commending you on steering things in a really great direction with some very clear goals to achieve and achieving those goals. So I commend you.
Sophie.
I'll jump on board with that. It was not easy to start as executive director of a library and doing it virtually and to continue to manage a large organization, establish relationships with people inside the organization, in the city, and in the community. And to do that all under these unusual circumstances and to have been able to complete so many of these goals so successfully, I really think it is pretty extraordinary. And I'm very grateful for what you are bringing to this organization. And just hats off to you.
Thank you, Sophie. Tess, I want to say I've really enjoyed working with you. And that summary, that report you just gave, confirms our belief that you were the right person for this position. And you are the right person for this position. You've proven that time and time again. And quite honestly, I'm very proud to be associated with you and with our libraries. This is a great organization, and it's only getting better. And I'm really proud of that. Thank you. All right, folks. Anybody else? We move on. And now the monthly report. Tess.
Thank you, everyone, for your support. I very much appreciate it. It means a lot to me. I'm going to try to keep this brief because it's a lot of me speaking. As many of you may be aware, there is now an administrative regulation in effect that requires that all of the City of Berkeley employees must report their vaccination status by October 15th and be fully vaccinated against COVID by November 15th. And of course, there is an accommodation process in terms of religious and medical accommodations. And we, like all of the other city departments, are participating in this effort. And, you know, what we're really just trying to make sure that staff aren't experiencing unnecessary barriers, that they're getting any help that they need in terms of navigating this. And I think it's one thing that it is important for me to point out is that the City of Berkeley HR department is continuing to confirm meetings with all of the city employees' bargaining units. And the library has not been directly involved in that process. So we have not been directly negotiating impacts with our bargaining units. basically, if folks have an approved accommodation or not participating, they will be participating in a mandatory testing program. And we're still learning more about the details of how that's going to be implemented. So with respect to the bylaws, because I think it's important for me to follow up on this, this was a project that was identified as a priority by a number of different trustees, and I continue to work on it. And basically during the March 2021 meeting, I had provided a summary of our next steps with respect to this process. So basically I have now identified a consultant who has years of experience in terms of public libraries, board development, and she is now reviewing the draft document. The other step in the process was that after I incorporated her feedback, I was going to also submit the draft for legal review, and then I would be bringing it back to the Board of Library Trustees for initial public comment. Depending on how much public comment there is to incorporate, we would potentially have to go through another cycle of that just to make sure that we were actively incorporating all of the feedback from the public. So right now the bylaws are under review by the person that I've identified to work on this project. And I also want to add, the section in the bylaws that relates to the selection process for new trustees. And I think that's particularly important language. We felt the bylaws subcommittee, the original bylaws subcommittee that included Trustee Hunt, Trustee Hahn, and Elliot Warren, had determined that the draft was pretty much ready to go, but there's a section that I think needs to be more complete relating to the trustee selection process. So we're paying special attention to that in our development of this draft. Moving on, I wanted to provide a brief update on vacancies and recruitment. Of course, you've had an opportunity to meet Nika. I'm so happy she's here. I'm sad to announce that Danielle McMillan, our associate HR analyst, has left the library to pursue a different opportunity. That, of course, is another significant change. But one thing that's really wonderful for the library is that the city's HR department has already initiated this recruitment, and we expect to be conducting interviews for this position, I think, in less than 2 weeks. So we're really fortunate that we're going to be able to hopefully fill that HR vacancy very quickly, because, as you know, it's critical in terms of our ability to progress with other recruitments. That said, we have progressed with other recruitments, despite the fact that we haven't had Danielle's support. We've gone through a selection process for a temporary tool lending specialist. We've almost completed our supervising librarian recruitment. And we're also about to interview again for library aides. I think that this is indicative of the times. We've lost some people since we last did the library aid recruitment to was retirement. Another person got a job as a librarian, that's great. That's what we hope will happen. It just means, though, that there's a little bit more work to do with respect to that. And then when we complete that, we'll be moving on to librarians. I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge and thank the Berkeley Public Library Foundation. And I just wanted to acknowledge both staff member Kathy Huff and also the president of the foundation board, Tian Lee, for their support of the library. We're thrilled to have received a $150,000 check that will continue to help us fund central library improvements, innovative pilot programs that'll help us address needs, and I think provide different types of service to the community. I'm also really grateful to the Friends Foundation, the Friends Board, who approved the library's funding proposal for $87,000 for programming in fiscal year 2022. It was a really great process. We had a great conversation about this funding, and I'm just so excited that we'll be able to have that resource in order to better serve the community. I'm proud of the staff at Terre Haute Pittman South for having been able to host some of the vaccine clinics. There are pop-up clinics that Health and Human Services has been able to provide around the city. And we had one on September 8th. A total of 23 people got vaccinated. And we've got two more coming up in October. And I'm just grateful to the staff there for making that happen. So with that, I will conclude my report.
Very good. Thank you, Tess. Any questions from board members? All right. I don't see any hands. Okay. I think we're at the end of the formal agenda, except for future agenda items. We've already taken care of, I mean, we have something pending for at the, oh, Tess, your hand's up?
Perhaps that was premature. Please finish what you were going
to
say.
Well, I was going to say, we have something pending on the evaluation with a date set no later than. I'm not sure. Okay, Tess, go ahead. What do you want to add?
I'd like to bring to the board's attention a possible recommendation in terms of advancing the strategic planning process. I think it would be a good idea to identify a time when that might be on a future agenda or perhaps an upcoming agenda.
Sure.
Could it be next month?
How much time do you need for that? You can put it on the next one if you want.
I will need to determine whether it should be November, December, but that would be my target.
Okay, good. Sounds good.
Tess, also, you had talked about coming back to us with the report on how the joint labor management group functions. And when I think I first brought it up, they were right in the middle of changing representatives and whatnot, and you wanted to wait until that had settled down. Has it settled? Is it time for that, or is it still settling?
I think that's a good idea. So I'll go ahead and talk with that team about it, and then I will propose possible timing for that. Thank you for bringing that.
Great.
Yeah, thank you, Diane. Anything else? I think our next 2 months look pretty. We've got stuff coming up, so unless anybody has anything to add. Diane?
Can I ask just one question? We've sort of left the evaluation process a little bit in midair. Should we each work on that and get our comments to John as soon as possible? Do we want to set a timing for that? I mean, it seems like we don't want to wait till December to do the work to send it in. So do you think, for instance, we could each get something to John in the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, Diane, thank you. I was going to say 2 weeks, three at the latest would really be helpful. And if somebody has, you know, if something comes up and you can't get that done, just let me know. But, you know, let's work. The goal is to have that, you know, to me within 2 weeks, 3 weeks at the very latest.
Good.
Thank you. All right. Unless there's something else, I need a motion to adjourn because we have to do that on Zoom.
So moved.
I can't just say adjourned, which is my want. You know, that's my inclination.
So moved, John.
Thank you. Is there a second? And Amy seconds.
Okay.
So we also need a roll call on that, Eve.
John Solosky?
Yes.
Amy Roth?
Yes, please.
Diane Davenport?
Yes, indeed.
Beverly Green?
Yes.
And Sophie Hahn?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Great meeting.
Thank you, Tess. That was a great meeting. Thank you all.
Thank you, too.
Everybody, bye-bye. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Why can't I get my...